This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. And tonight's guest, Miss Dorothy Height, President, National Council of Negro Women. Tonight's subject, what does the Negro want now? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in New York City is Miss Dorothy Height, President of the National Council of Negro Women and Director of the Office of Racial Integration for the National Young Women's Christian Association, as well as being a member of the President's Commission on Women in America. She is also a graduate sociologist. If you'd like to ask Miss Height a question on tonight's topic, what does the Negro want now, or make a comment on the Negro Revolution, give us a call here at Night Call. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Dial us direct. If you wish, you may make the call collect. Now remember, please place that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. The operators are on duty, and we're now accepting calls here at Night Call. The number, area code 313-846-6601. And let's hear from you. Miss Height, what does the Negro want now?
Well, Mr. Gibb, I think that the Negro really wants what everyone else wants. He wants to be a full-fledged citizen, treated as such, and with full awareness that he has every possibility that every other American has.
Doesn't he have this in the North?
Well, he doesn't have it in the North, and he doesn't have it in the South. And I think it means that he has now one good thing, in that there is the Civil Rights Act of 1964. There have been the many steps towards making the constitutional guarantees to every citizen come more alive for him, and more clearly defined in law. So that what I think he has is a foundation of law that's been clarified, and he has achieved some bits of this in the ways in which the opportunities have been opening up.
All right, the Negro has the civil rights law now,
yes.
But many Negroes are still demonstrating. Why is this?
Well, they're still demonstrating because there really is yet no fulfillment. You see, even when you say to me, what does the Negro want now? There is something implied that he somehow has achieved everything, and isn't this the end? And I think that we've realized that he's had to demonstrate in order to make the nation realize that he didn't have his rights.
Well, don't you think this has antagonized many white people?
Oh, I'm sure it has.
Well,
In fact, I think that many are so antagonized that they keep saying it just the way your question does, what do they want now? As if to say, they have everything. What else? And I think this in itself has in it, to me, a kind of paternalistic and patronizing tone, because one would be surprised if you said, well, what is it that white Americans want?
Yeah, that would shock me.
Yeah,
when I think about it.
I mean, that's a kind of assumption that when you speak of an American, you're talking about a white citizen. And I think what we're really recognizing is that, except for the fact that the problems of the American Negro have been brought out from under the rug through the civil rights movement and its demonstrations, we might well be right back where we were 10, 20 years ago.
But can you expect the white citizen to change his attitude overnight? In other words, many of us have lived with the Negro problem, as we view it, and feel that the Civil Rights Bill is a step in the right direction. Now, if the Negro will only but give us time to adjust to this, to the fact that we now see Negroes on television commercials, we now see Negroes in nationwide magazines as models,
This is all new to us, and you may can make all the laws in the world, but we still have to have time to accept the Negro. Well, can you understand this?
You see, Russ, actually, the Negro is not the little man who hasn't been there. He's been there all the time. And it may be that we're just beginning to see him. But this is a part of the problem. We're just beginning to realize that we haven't been aware of his presence, of his needs, of his hopes, and his aspirations. And therefore, when the white man awakens now and suddenly realizes that the Negro is there, it's hard for him to realize that the Negro hasn't been thinking that he wasn't there. See, I mean, it's,
well, how does the Negro view a white man?
Well, I think it depends upon which Negro and which white man. But if I were to just generalize, I would say, against the problem of civil rights, that one can't help but look at his fellow white man and feel that he's looking at a person who can understand what it means to have a decent house, a decent family, a decent neighborhood, a decent job, and yet not be find himself just as alert to a feeling that this is something someone else wants. And I think this is part, perhaps the toughest thing for the Negro to think of as he looks at the white man. He looks at him with a
condescension, would you say?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's condescension. I think he has in the past looked at him as if he were the person against whom he had to judge himself.
This is the
and
Negro.
I think suddenly now, the Negro has a new image of himself, and he looks at the white man as another person, another citizen, and he himself wants to be treated as a person and as a citizen.
Do you think that the white man can ever look at the Negro in this manner? Without, I think some of us have a tremendous guilt complex. I've heard the gag in Negro circles about white people all saying, well, I have a Negro friend. Does that ring anything to you?
Well, I should say, yes, that's... Well, I think, and I must say that I know that they are Negroes to say, I also have a white friend.
Well, why do we feel this way? This is what I'm asking. Do you think that the Negro is actually a part of the white man's conscience that he can't quite reckon with? In other words, is this part of our Christian ethics that we realize that we're all in the same planet together and that the same Lord made us, and yet somehow or other we want to say, well, look, your skin's different than mine, therefore, I want you to have all the rights, but... Is this how we appear to you?
Well, I guess this is a part of man's failing. I wouldn't be in the work I am if I didn't believe that something could be done about it. But I think it's a part of our tendency to feel that other people somehow do not have quite the place in the sun that we ourselves want. And I think this is what we tend to do. And I'm little by little realizing that all of this presents in us a sense of guilt. I feel guilty, too, as I look at the race problem, because I keep thinking to myself, where is it that we have failed? Where has it that the Negro's been too quiet?
Well, now I wonder, can I interject something here?
Mm-hmm.
Many white people in conversations with other white people will say, well, look at the crime rate of the Negro. Look at the Negro family. It's breaking up. Look at the welfare load. And we say, why don't they concentrate on their own problems and then we'll accept them? Now, maybe we're wrong here. Maybe this is assuming that you accept our way of doing things and sort of pushing the Negro culture down, and then we'll accept you if you accept the white man's culture. I'm wondering if this is right.
I think actually, Russ, I think you sound very confused.
Yes, I think I'm a...
You speak as if you think that there is some separate Negro culture and some white culture. Actually, I see myself as a part of the American culture. And I have helped to make it just as the white man has helped to make it. But I think the thing that both of us have to realize is that we do not exist in a vacuum. And these things we call attitudes are related to the whole climate in which we ourselves operate. For instance, we have to see that if there's nothing for us to want one from the other, like jobs or like other kinds of opportunities, perhaps we would all just be able to move with sweetness and light. But a part of it is that the demand is upon us every day to make choices and make decisions and take steps and to act, and that I'm more concerned about the actions that we take than about our attitudes. Because, you see, I believe that the white man, when he is placed in a situation where he has to act with decency towards the black man, or the black man in the position where he has to act towards the white man, that if he does this, his attitudes will come along with it. And when you want to have time for what? You need time to act. And if you act with some spirit of brotherhood, after a while you'll begin to have the attitude of brotherhood.
Our guest tonight, Miss Dorothy Hite, President of the National Council of Negro Women. Our topic, What Does the Negro Want Now? You're tuned to the Night Call Network. This is
Very
Night
good,
Call,
Dorothy.
Where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
The proceeding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our topic tonight on Night Call, What Does the Negro Want Now? Our guest, Miss Dorothy Hite, who is president of the National Council of Negro Women. And if you'd like to ask Miss Hite a question or make a comment on the Negro Revolution here in the United States, give us a call here at Night Call. Our lines are now open and we're accepting calls. The number to call us at is area code 313-84-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-84-6601. Miss Hite, we now have a caller from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. George Washington Butler, Jr. Hello, George. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
I disagree with the lady that was just speaking and said she feels of the problem. What does the Negro want now?
Yes, sir.
This is proper question. Actually, is what belongs to the Negro now, and I cannot go along with saying what goes with the Negro now is out of line. I'm going to tell you a little story about myself. I am a Negro here in Denver, Colorado. Lived here all my life. My parents are school teachers, both of them. My father is a woodworking teacher, and my mother is a science teacher in the field of astronomy. And this is at the University of Colorado. I have rebelled against my parents and everyone at the time. And my grandparents are slaves. I was brought into this country, I understand, by one of the three choices. I was either kidnapped or I was sold by the chief of the tribe at the Congo or wherever it was in Africa that I came from. And the other choice was that my ancestors came on their own will. The problem is now that I would like to have a little freedom to return back there as a grandchild and find out myself or live in the country that my people were taken from and try to find out the stories, the history of the slave in the United States, because there's been so many stories about this, and I cannot accept what do I want now, because it's not a question of what do I want now. It is what belongs to me now.
Ms. Height, would you care to comment on that?
Well, I think I'd certainly agree with Mr. Butler that what I want now is really what belongs to me. I think this is what the Negro is really saying. The reason I think the question comes the way it does is because of the fact that there are many people who keep asking, what does the Negro want now? He has had a march on Washington. He's had demonstrations all over the country. He's made certain advances. And they've raised this question. Beg pardon?
I have taken part in all of them.
He's taken part in the demonstrations, Ms. Height.
You've taken a part in the demonstrations.
Yes,
and I think that you are saying, you are expressing the same kind of feeling that many of us, in fact, have, is that the question, what do you want, carries with it somewhat the connotation that you want something that doesn't belong to you.
This shouldn't be the question. It is what belongs to him is any other common citizen in the United States, whether he's Negro or of any other race. The question of what does the Negro want now is absolutely out of line to me. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and I think this is what the Negro is trying to say to his white brother, that when he raises the question, what does he want now, he simply wants what belongs to him, and I agree with you thoroughly.
Mr. Butler, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Thank you very, very much for your comments.
Fine, I'll let someone else talk.
Good night, sir. Mr. George Washington Butler, Jr., a gentleman from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Dorothy?
Yes, Russ.
Do you think that the question, it seems that that's bothering some people, what does the Negro want now? Yet from a white man's point of view, that's quite a legitimate question. You realize that? I mean, as far as I feel, we discussed this question at length before we decided to use it as a topic on tonight's show. And I talk to a lot of white people, and they feel that you have these things, that the Negro people have the same rights as we have now. Now, it's up to the Negro to prove himself. Now, is that out of line?
Well, it's out of line because it's disregarding the fact, as I think the last caller just pointed out, that the Negro doesn't want anything special that's different from what everyone else wants. He wants what every other American wants.
Now,
that is that he wants the right to be himself in his country with full freedom, like every other citizen. And I think that the reason we battle it around and we state the question this way is because in the North and in the South, that white Americans are asking the question, well, aren't they satisfied? Because I think that's what's reflected in this question, and I think the question is in itself evidence of the real climate in the country. Even the so-called white liberals, of lift their eyebrows and say, well, now they've had all of these things, or we're giving them some chances. Now what do they want? Without realizing that it is not they who are giving. It is that the Negro has had so much taken away from him so long that so much that really belongs to him.
In the first instance, then.
Yes.
We have a caller from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Miss Eleanor Golden. Hello, Eleanor. Will you speak right up? You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Hello. I would like to speak to... Well, of course, I can speak to you. I'll speak to anybody. Let me put it this way. I was born in Harlem, in really New York City. And I don't have to tell Ms. Height, what it is. Of course, it was a long time ago, but I come from, that particular background. I wonder if Ms. Height realizes that not too long ago, in one of the largest, colleges in New York or universities, that they would only take just a certain quota of Catholics, of Jews, even though it was a shame that the abilities of these men and the genius may have been lost to the world. And actually, I really think that it was awful. Now, we'll go again to really one of the largest insurance companies in New York, who would not hire Jews in their offices. Oh, they use them as agents to go out and get business. I think they've graduated a bit, too. Now, I have admired the Negro because of the fact that they've taken the bull by the horns and said, look, we have suffered long enough. Now, we want what is ours. But I like the method that really Martin Luther King has used. He has used, a very, very quiet movement that was done in really dignity, loud but dignified. And he received the sympathy of all of the Americans and all of the world. But I, as a minority race, have also been told to take that chip off my shoulder, and I found that, when I took it off, I was better off. But when you get the belligerence that seems to be growing in the Negro movement, I feel very badly because I feel that they are upsetting all the good that they have attained at this time. I believe that they are actually making these bigots say, I told you so. Whereas the other attitude would get them so much further, so much faster, on so much more solid ground than the belligerent movement. This is the thing, what I am trying to say, as such, I did not know what prejudice was when I was born in Harlem, grew up in the slums, went to school with a lot of marvelous colored children that made Hunter. I sat next to them all my life, and I didn't know the difference, let's put it that way. It didn't make any difference. Now, the Negro is not the one, incidentally, that is accused of the crime. In really towns, you will find that actually, the Spanish American people have taken over. This position. And honestly, the way I feel about it, I do hope, and I pray, that anybody that agitates in the wrong manner, they're only hurting themselves. This is what worries me. I don't like to see the Negro or anybody hurt themselves, and I believe that their cause would be furthered. Oh, so much more If only they would go along the lines that Martin Luther King has laid down, where everybody is in sympathy with what the Negro is, what he can be, and what he stands for, and what he deserves.
Eleanor, our time's up.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much for your comments. Miss Eleanor Golden, a lady from Denver, Colorado.
And she's listening on KTLN. Our guest tonight, Miss Dorothy Height. She's president of the National Council of Negro Women. Our topic, What Does the Negro Want Now? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Sometimes out on that limb without him. It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
What does the Negro want now? That's our topic on Night Call. And our guest is Miss Dorothy Height, and she's president of the National Council of Negro Women. And if you'd like to join us here at Night Call, our lines are now open, and our operators are on duty. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that telephone call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601, and we'd like to hear from you. Miss Height, you didn't get a chance to reply to Eleanor, Miss Golden. Would you care to comment on that now?
Yes, you know, I must say to Eleanor Golden that she has in me a very sympathetic listener when she talks about quotas, because I was a victim of a quota back in the 1930s when I passed all of the entrance exams at Barnard College, but I would have been the third Negro. And so I had to shift to another school, so I know what she means. And I thought as she was saying that her awareness of what a quota does would help her to feel with me that... one has to keep on working until such things are completely eliminated. And therefore, the nonviolent movement, the efforts which Martin Luther King and others have used, have been very effective in bringing to light exactly what is happening to people and why they feel as they do. But the very real tragedy is that with all of this, with the number of people who have died, with the number who have gone to jail, with those who have walked the streets, that we still have not been able to get the kind of protection in our cities, the kind of opening up of jobs and all the things that are necessary, and that there comes along then a feeling that you're upsetting the good that you have done because of the fact that you're continuing to say something else has to happen. I think many white people haven't stopped to realize that the nonviolent movement has been on the testing ground, and there have been a lot of people watching it, and those who seem to be more belligerent are so because they say, well, you've used these methods. And no matter what you've done, it has achieved very little. It is true we have laws now, but we have achieved very little. There are even people who feel, given the law, what more do you need? And I think that the very fact that Miss Golden says it's upsetting the good, setting back the cause, this in itself means that there's not a real acceptance that the Negro wants what really belongs to him as a citizen. And
he wouldn't need a cause then if he had been fully accepted, is that it? Is that what you're saying?
If the nonviolent movement had been accepted and we had achieved the things that we've been struggling for, then there'd be no grounds for some of the real outbursts that have come. But the grounds are there because there's been so much undercover. I was in out in Los Angeles during the recent troubles out there, and the thing that interested me the most was to hear the number of people who said, oh, we were all so peaceful. We were all living quietly, side by side. This was such a wonderful thing. And now these people will upset something.
But they really weren't living.
They couldn't have had all of the disturbance if the people weren't already upset by their unemployment and inequality.
I see. Dorothy, we have callers backed up here. We have one in Billings, Montana, a gentleman, Clay Christensen. He's listening on KTHL. Hello, Clay. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Okay. I was just going to ask her, how does she think that the whites and the Negroes could get along?
Clay, one question of you. How old are you?
I'm 12 years old.
I see.
How do you think they can get along? I think they can get along as people. I think they can get along as citizens. They can get along by simply each helping the other to feel himself a part of the community. I think, for example, if you took it in your school, that people get along as they simply say to themselves, each one of us is here to learn. And then they get along. And I think that when someone says, I don't know the difference, I think you have to learn how to appreciate difference. I have to appreciate the fact that people are different from me and that this is a valuable thing and not something to be dreaded or feared. And this is a part of what I think helps us to get along, the appreciation. One of the other.
Clay, thank you for calling Night Call.
Yes, thank you very much.
Good night, young man. Mr. Clay Christensen from Billings, Montana, a listener on KTHL. And we go now to Denver, Colorado again, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Roosevelt Miller. Hello, Roosevelt. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Hello. I can't hear you very well.
We can hear you well, Roosevelt.
That's good.
Yes, you can.
I have a question I'd like to ask you. I am a Negro, and I would like to get some specific information about the United Negro Colleges in the South. And I would like to know, for students such as who are, you know, poor or unfinancially able to go to college in the North, I'd like to know if these institutions are cheaper, you know, than those in the North.
Well, actually, some of them are less expensive, but some of them are just as expensive, and I think the thing that we have to see is that they are, many of them are equally good schools with any schools anywhere in the United States. But some of them are less expensive because they may be state-supported or supported by churches. And I would think that if you were interested in knowing more about one of the colleges and you wanted to go to one or find out, that it would be a very good thing to write either to the United Negro College Fund here in New York on East 54th Street and get the information about each college, or to write to a specific one that you know about, that you've been thinking about. I think you will find that there is a real effort now to make it possible for students who want to go to school to do so.
Roosevelt?
Since you're a man, I'm especially eager to urge you to go to school because fewer Negro men than women have aspired to college.
Roosevelt, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
All right, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Roosevelt Miller from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. Dorothy, we have a caller in Baltimore, Maryland now, listener on WBAL, Mr. Charles Smith. Hello, Charles. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
All right. Thank you very much. I have a question to ask. If whites were demonstrating, would they allow someone to molest them as they are trying to get a certain point across?
Charles wanted to know whether or not if whites were demonstrating, would they allow someone to molest them? Is that correct, Charles?
That's correct.
Miss Height, what do you think?
Well, I think that whoever demonstrates would hardly want anyone to molest them. And that if I read into your question, the fact that you feel that there is some brutality and some mistreatment of people who demonstrate. I think that I would have to say, black or white, when people would have a feeling against those who do not recognize that in the American system, the demonstration and the redress of grievance is a part of the very nature of our nation.
In other words, are you saying that demonstrations actually are legal?
Demonstrations are legal. Now, the Boston Tea Party, I guess, was one of the major demonstrations of all time because we were saying we were against taxation without representation. Now, people may resent this and kind of react against it and molest those who are demonstrating. And I think that this has happened in many communities and that we just have to say that the American people have a lot to learn about what the protections of our country are.
Well, many white people feel the demonstrations are illegal, that they actually are upsetting the apple cart, and that the Negro
has...
That's
what they're supposed to do. Upset the apple cart.
Well, don't you think this, in the end, is causing more hard feelings between the races?
Yes.
Well, then, why would people want to persist if the aim of demonstrations is to bring a harmony between the races?
For one thing, there is nothing that grows that does not have some conflict and some tension involved. And that one of the real things that had happened in this country was that the Negro had gone about suffering. He had seen himself, even now, 100 years after emancipation, the victim of the poorest neighborhoods and the poorest schools, the poorest paid jobs. He had taken this as if he were happy. He had gone about in that way, and now suddenly he burst forward, and he had to let this come out in a way that would make it unmistakably clear that he was not happy, that he recognized the damage that had happened to him. And therefore, his demonstration was the way that he expressed it, and I think this was essential, or our country wouldn't be in the very progress that people are talking about that we've made and that we might upset today.
Charles? Did Dorothy answer your question?
Yes, she did. I had quite a few others. Do I have any more time?
Well, actually, we have about 30 seconds.
30 seconds, all right, then. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Charles. Mr. Charles Smith from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Our guest tonight is Miss Dorothy Height. She's the president of the National Council of Negro Women. Our topic, What Does the Negro Want Now? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money, busy buying gadgets.
your idea of fulfillment. Just wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line. Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight, Miss Dorothy Height. She's president of the National Council of Negro Women. And our topic, what does the Negro want now? If you'd like to call us here at Night Call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are now open, and we can accept your call. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere. Collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Let's hear your opinion on the topic, what does the Negro want now? Ms. Height, I have a caller in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Harvey Barnes. Good evening, Harvey. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
Why do you think that so many white people feel this way about Negro demonstrations?
For nearly 100 years, the white man's pattern has been giving the Negro a little bit of token this and token that, and he's always cautioning him that he's not ready and the time is not right yet, and he's always used a very secure method of divide and conquer. You can look in any city and you see so many examples. For instance, you can go to...
Hello?
Thank you for your comments.
All right, thank you much.
Mr. Harvey Barnes,
a gentleman in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Dorothy, one comment. Many white people will say, well, now look, we have Negroes working with us, but as soon as a white man criticizes a Negro, the Negro automatically says, well, look, you're being prejudiced. Do Negroes realize that white people tend to have disagreements with other white people? That sometimes when somebody does something wrong, it's not because, and you criticize them, it's not because you're prejudiced, it's just because you feel in your own mind that they are doing something wrong and that you should bring this to their attention. Do Negroes understand this?
Well, I think, you know, Negroes aren't angels, they're people. And there are plenty of Negroes who are very sensitive, but I find that many people are sensitive. And the moment you begin to criticize them or their work, they take it personally. They think that there is something you have against them. I think many Negroes who react like this have some kind of reason, however, that they can pin it on. And what we have to do is to just make sure that they're wrong.
In other words, you don't approve of a Negro using the prejudice routine as a crutch.
Let me tell you one thing, Russ. I don't want anybody to give me anything because I'm a Negro. I want to be able to say that the job I do will stand on its own feet because it is done the way it needs to be done. Because, and I think this is what has to happen. You know, Margaret Mead once made a statement that has stuck with me. She said, everybody needs to know enough people different from themselves and to work and associate with enough people different from themselves so that they can disagree with them without feeling prejudiced.
And also, this is the way this is the way that an individual gets to know himself, when you can mirror and reflect back off of other people.
That's right.
We have a caller now in Syracuse, New York, a listener on WBAL, Mr. James Ravencraft. Hello, James. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, the last comment that I heard from Ms. Hike somewhat anticipated the point that I wanted to bring out, which was that I felt that in certain cases there seems to be a hypersensitivity in the Negro American, which seems to result from feeling that anything, any criticism directed against the Negro, or any hostility toward the Negro is necessarily because he or she is a Negro. I was thinking of cases of demonstrations for other causes, such as the pacifists, or people are against the Vietnam policy or other government policies. These people generally have a good deal of hostility directed to them also, and it seems to me that this is a more general problem of the inability of some people to recognize differing opinions, or the inability of people to reconcile the fact that other people have ideas that are quite diverse from theirs. Now, I realize that it may be that I'm not seeing all of the discrimination that there is, being a what they call a WASP, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant,
yeah,
Southerner. It's possible that I'm not really recognizing all of the discrimination, but still it seems that we have a more universal problem here that we have to solve before we can ever get rid of the problem of racial discrimination.
And what is that problem?
The funny part about it is, you know, every part of the problem of racial discrimination is a part of the problem of human relations.
Ah, yes.
But the thing that happens is that the racial factor cuts into it in such a way that it gives it a particular imbalance. For instance, just as you're saying, we might demonstrate against Vietnam, and there are those who do, and there are those who feel those people shouldn't be demonstrating. They do not believe, as many people do, that in a nation that has civil liberties as we have it, that the freedom to demonstrate is a part of what makes the nation. Now, the moment people disagree because of the fact that the demonstration seems to be against something that is closer to them, there is a great tendency to say, you're hurting your cause. You see, and I think what is now happening is that Negroes are beginning to feel another kind of resentment of the people who come back to at them saying, if you don't stop now, all the games that we've let you make, we're not going to let you have any further.
Yes, I think this is a very unfair accusation, because I think it's sort of playing dirty. It's doing something under the table. It's like saying, you're really a second-class citizen, but we've agreed to say that you're a first-class citizen, and now if you don't go along with us, well, we'll say you're a second-class citizen again.
Sounds like a giant game of let's pretend.
Yeah, and in addition to it, you know, it's almost to me like this. Here's a person who keeps me from having the things that rightfully belong to me. And then the minute I start working to get them, he not only wants to control how much of my own rights I may have, but then he wants to tell me how I can protest what has happened to me. See, this is a part of what really gets me going.
Oh, yes.
Well, James, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, thank you.
We enjoyed your comments. Mr. James Ravencraft from Syracuse, New York, a listener on WBAL. And I think if we hurry, we have time for Mr. Larry Miles in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. Larry, we're short of time. Can you make your comment or question brief, Mr. Larry Miles?
I don't know anything about Mrs. Height's age, and I don't want to cast any reflections at all, but I wonder if maybe that the older people in the Negro group haven't started this thing and got it well started, and I believe that they have done a good job. I'm a white man, and I'm in favor of them. I think they've done terrific, but I wonder if it isn't about time for the colored people to start relying on their much younger people who probably have quite a bit more educational background. I'm talking about the group. Possibly have quite a more of an educational background and a different feeling about our nation than maybe some of the older people do. And I wonder if we don't all of us continually bring up this slavery thing, and I certainly am not to blame for it. And at the same time, I don't feel that this is reflective to those people who have been born out of slavery. And I wonder if Mrs. Height doesn't think it's more time for the colored people to start becoming a part of our homogenous group, to establish small businesses. No businessman, even as white people, we have a hard time starting a business, a little hat shop or a little hamburger shop or something. And I've been looking for this, and I don't see it in our regular economy any place in our particular locality.
Larry, our time's just about up. I'm sorry we have to cut your comments short.
Okay.
Thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much for listening.
Mr. Larry Miles from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. Our guest tonight, Miss Dorothy Height.
I want to thank you for being our guest. We certainly enjoyed your comments and your views, Dorothy.
It's been a real pleasure having you here on Night Call.
Well, thanks, Russ. It's been good to be here.
Miss Dorothy Height, President of the National Council of Negro Women. Our topic tonight, what does the Negro want now? Next Monday night on Night Call, we take a week-long look at love in America. Our guest, Mr. Bud Freeman. Our topic, the Limelighters Look at Love. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.